Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Leaderching. My guest today is Anna Paschut. She is Business Development Director, Trademark and Patent Attorney at Sulima Grabowska Szyputowska in Poland. Hi, Anna, how are you?
Hello, Mirta, I'm fine. And I would like to thank you very much for inviting me for this talk today.
You're very welcome. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. So let's just kick it off. My first question would be, Anna, what did you dream of becoming when you were a little girl?
Oh, that might be to you, because when I was a little girl, I dreamt of being a doctor, a physician, and healing people, going to Africa and healing poor little kids. At the time when I grew up, there were this alarming news on TV about the hunger in Africa. And idealistic as a little girl can be, I just dreamt that I would be a doctor. I would go to Africa and heal these poor children.
That's amazing.
Yes.
It must have made an impression on you so that you wanted to do this.
Yes, actually, when I think back, I think helping people was always a kind of appealing thing to me. And now, many years later, I am doing so, but just in a little bit different way. But we will go to that.
So, yeah, you mentioned that helping people was appealing to you. Was there something in your environment or in your upbringing that kind of fostered that kind of, you know, sense of care for others?
Well, I think that in particular, my family values, that I was raised with a strong focus, or maybe not focus, but the rule was like you should always help those in need. And it was a message passed to us, to me, my brothers, and other family members, cousins, by my grandmother. She was an orphan, can you imagine? And she built up a huge family, rose kids, sent them to university, which was not an obvious thing, you know, in Poland before the Second World War. And but she always was very humble, and she taught us from the beginning to help those in need, that if you have something, you should share it. So maybe also being brought up in a communist country, we didn't have a lot, you know, we struggled really with big things. So the sense of helping each other was maybe more developed than nowadays. So I think this combined together, and also I think this is the way I am, you know, we are born, some people are more sensitive, the others are less, or sensitive in other things. And I always liked it. Maybe one thing that very few people know, I am also the oldest child, and I had to take care of three younger brothers.
Yeah, that's a lot of young brothers, actually. Yeah. It's interesting to me that you mention your grandma.
Yes.
So you mentioned that, you know, it was really uncommon for her time. I would even say even today, right? It would be very uncommon if a woman would kind of achieve to send them, you know, their children and then afterwards grandchildren to university. Today, not everywhere that's common. So it's still quite an achievement. Is there anything else that your grandma passed on as values besides the, you know, caring for others? Is there anything else that your family took on as something important?
Oh my God, this could be a lot of things. Really, and I wouldn't like to dominate it, although I would pay tribute to my grandmother always. You see, she was an orphan and she didn't have opportunity to go to higher education herself. But now looking back, she was immensely intelligent person and life-wise. And she would, apart from being fair and always trying to help the others in need, I think that one of the things she always also emphasized that you have to put an effort in your life.
Yes.
Looks like, and she really lived through difficult times. She lived through the Second World War and the communist times, which were really tough. And never give up, look forward, and do your thing well. One of the things also that she really didn't like if people did things like in a halfway, not the best. Even if it was a simplest thing, you know, like if you clean your apartment, you should clean it well. If you iron your shirts, you should clean it well, like tidy and etc. So these were the very simple things, but I think if you have this general approach in whatever you do to trying to do your best, it's really one of the wisest lessons you can get in life, right?
Yes, that's actually, and now we can actually go over to the next topic because you just mentioned, right, that actually a lot of the values that you have mentioned now kind of are already characteristics that we often use when we talk about leadership, right? And you have been in several different positions throughout your career. And I wanted to ask you, what is for you a good manager or a good leader? What does it make it? What does it take?
Well, there are many definitions, and since I had to take up some bigger responsibilities and also heading other people in my firm, I think I do not have one definition, but I think a good manager is the one that primarily knows how to talk to different people to get message through. And this is the skill that I still have been working on. I would also say that the good manager is somebody that the people that depend on you or rely to you in your work environment would be the one that has the knowledge. So they really feel that you can support them or give them the right tips to fulfill their duties. A good manager has to have a really strong balance. So, because the situations and problems that you face unexpectedly on a daily basis are different, you have time pressure, you have other things on your head, and you have to keep cool. Keep it cool, meaning like you cannot let the emotions overtake your thinking. So I may continue like that. I would also say that the manager has to be fair. So if you as or me as a manager, if you try to set the rules or goals, and you say this will be done this way, and if we fail or something, there will be some consequences. You have to be either consequent in awarding your people and also in giving, you know, negative feedback, but the negative feedback meaning encouraging them to change something. But you have to be consistent. You cannot weigh or opinions too often. Of course, nobody is like stable, situation is different, and I'm not talking about the knowledge or opinion or how things should be done, because there can always be some other ways that somebody may just say something and you will see, oh, that's a good idea. So I'm not talking about it, but I'm just talking about being consistent in your actions and opinions towards your people. That's also a challenge. But I think consistency is also a very important item for a leader, like characteristic.
I like the idea that you put forward. I think you're mentioning a couple of interesting elements. I think you're saying there is a, it is important for managers to support their teams, right? To be there so that team members can reach out and feel that they're you will have their backs. I like the idea of fairness because I think that as managers, and as you said, it's something that's not always easy. We have a tendency to feel closer or more at ease with associates that are similar to us. And we may feel less at ease with associates that are a bit different. And I think, as you mentioned, the you mentioned two parts of it. The one thing is communicating in different ways so that everyone gets the message, because communication is a tool kind of sided, you know, thing that happens, right? And you have to adapt. At the other hand, what you said as well, the fairness, it's like it's at all times trying to make sure that you, as you mentioned, you're balanced, but at the same time don't come through with favoritisms or with preferences just because people are more as what you wish people were, right? Unconsciously. So I think that point to me is very important because I think we all have unconscious biases, right, towards people, irrespective of us wanting or not to have them. And I think you're right when you say it's a constant work, right? It's not something that it's we learn and then it's done, but it's rather something that we need to continue actually to apply every day and to check on ourselves to make sure that we are being consistent, that we are being fair, and that we are being there for our team members. Thank you so much for sharing that. My next question is a bit related to gender. As you know, gender equality is a topic that's really close to my heart. And I wanted to know if, from your perspective, you feel there is differences in the way that female leaders manage the team versus male leaders. Do you perceive a difference, or do you think it's more based on the individual?
I would say that I was lucky, first of all, because in the current company, you know, the leaders are the women.
Yeah, that makes it easier then.
For a long time in my career now, I had the women leadership and I'm used to it. But I also had a chance to work in other places, like when I work at the UIPO, I had a male leader, which I really appreciated a lot. So I think it is really an individual thing, but I would say that the problem still exists in general, in the industry, in our IP field, in legal field in general. But as I said, my personal experience is a little bit different because I'm surrounded by women since the beginning of my professional career in IP.
Okay, so you mentioned something that I think we agree, and that is that we still have things to talk about when it is about gender equality within the legal profession. Why do you think this is still existing? What do you think is happening that we don't get to a level where gender equality is normal? Because pretty much, you know, in the legal profession, most of the people have had a higher education. I think pretty much all of them have heard about equality, not only with respect to gender, but with respect to all the other differences that there are. Why do you think this problem persists?
Well, I think it's really deeply seated in the mentality. It does not actually resonate that much education because, as you said, most of the people that we are surrounded with have a higher education or even super education, various degrees. But this is the mentality that they were brought up in surrounded with. And for even if the male colleagues nowadays they would say yes, we know about it, we try, but this is something that it is in their subconsciousness, you know. So unless the kids are actually brought up in the with the idea of equality, like since I don't know the kindergarten, and they see examples in not only professional life but in schools, at home, you know, it's a much bigger, in my opinion, it is a much bigger problem to actually change it, and not so easy as we can now see, because since the, you know, the feminist movement, it's been like what, over 100 years now, and we are still in the phase, like when you really think, going to meeting, for example, with I faced that several times or dozens of times when I had a meeting, me alone with a group of male colleagues on the other side, and I was to advise them. Of course, after some time, when you gain their trust, maybe that your word actually is reasonable or whatever your advice, then the discussion changes. But I could still feel, and I still feel nowadays, that there is a hidden resilience, you know, in their way to actually welcome a female advisor just as good as they would welcome another male. But as said, I think it's a bigger problem, and it's the mentality that changes the slowest. It's not even the education, but yes.
The mindset, I agree. And actually, now that you mentioned, when you are as a female lawyer, you go into a meeting. I'm sure maybe this has happened to you as well, but I recall that I was going with a male associate of mine to meetings, and we were the two of us, right? And then people would greet first him, thinking that he is the manager. Because he is the man. And even though I was the manager, that happened, still continues to happen actually. And it happens with people from all sorts of cultures. So it's not only a cultural thing, it's just there is this assumption that the guy is the one who rules the scene and it's not the female. So that is always surprising to me. And the other thing that I continue to experience, not so much during the last year because of the pandemic, but when I used to travel a lot, is when you go and check in at the hotel, if you happen to be there with a male colleague, they will think he is your husband and they will want to take his name first and his credit card, whereas your colleagues and there is nothing. And so there is this assumption still in people's mind that the man needs to be addressed first. And if that's the case, then obviously the reason behind it is because there is still somewhere in the minds a hierarchy, right? A hierarchy as to who is the one, casually said, bringing back the whole, the bacon home, right? So it's interesting to me that you see this mindset, as you said, in the small things, right? It's not necessarily always in the promotions or the salary or but it's in the small things that one can see it. We are going to just jump a little bit back because I think that people may be interested as to how it came that you wanted to become a doctor and then finally ended up being an IP counsel. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, so that's also a story that probably will raise a smile on many people's. At least those who listen to that podcast will listen to that podcast. So, yes, I wanted to become a doctor, and I was pretty consistent until the final year of my grammar school. So I loved biology. I was really idealistic. So I went to the grammar school to a specialized class with a strong biochemistry background. And we really had some extra hours of chemistry, biology, and et cetera. So it was like a perfect preparation to take my university examination and start to study medicine, right? Everything made sense. And I was like one of the best students. I was really interested in biology and et cetera. So I read books like from university That's it. But when at the end of grammar school, or well, it wasn't the end, but like November maybe, and I had my university degree examination in June. We were supposed to sign some formal, information which university we will choose and etc. It was for statistical reasons, but also how the school was organized, we would be given some extra lessons in that direction. If I sign up for medicine, I would be even given more biology and chemistry and physics lessons. Down, in my room, I remember, and I had to answer my question whether helping people. Yes, this is something that I wanted to do as a child. I love biology, but is medicine really something that I am passionate about, the studies and etc.? And I think it was one of the most difficult, but also most mature decisions in my life that I said, no, I want to help people, but maybe not as a doctor. And believe me, I signed up for law. I remember my parents had almost heart attack because it was a change entirely, changed my mind. And they put a lot of effort to kind of persuade me that maybe this is just a moment of hesitation and that I should pursue the road that I already choose. And but I said no. There was no lawyer in the family whatsoever from either side. So I had absolutely, it was really like a choice out of the blue. They said, why did you come up with the law? But I had a reasonable explanation. And I said, well, I'm good in languages. I'm good in history in general. And like the I'm a good student, so I will be able to learn it. And I said, but I want to travel in my life. I want to do something more, international. Remember, I was 18, so my logical thinking was like, so how can I achieve it? And law seemed to me like it's a very respectful and direction to study. It gives you various opportunities, not only to become a lawyer itself. So I said, with languages and a law degree, I will be able to become a journalist or a diplomat or a lawyer. But there are far more possibilities for me to have this international career. Let's put it in brackets. Then just studying medicine and becoming the doctor in one single place.
I think what is impressive about what you're saying is the fact, and I think it's good that you mentioned it twice. You were a teen, right? So you were a teenager, and it's interesting that you took such a mature decision. I must admit, I fell into law by coincidence more than by anything else. So I think it's really interesting to see that you had a very clear path first, and then when this question really arose, where you had to, kind of make a statistical kind of input, right, for this form, that you once of a sudden, step back a little, took a moment to reflect, and then make a decision that has impacted your entire life. And well made, because today you are indeed an international professional, and you travel a lot, and you have clients from all over the world. So well done for
Well, I
that.
haven't thought about it, but when you asked me for this talk, I actually thought a little bit back, and even without realizing that, I'm pursuing this dream of working internationally, just in another way than it was foreseen. It wasn't easy, but maybe one important thing. Yes, I took a very mature decision, and I'm still amazed by myself. I do not say a lot of compliments towards myself because I think there's always a room for development. But yeah, at that time I'm impressed by how consistent I also was, because it was not difficult. It was not easy to convince, the parents, the teachers, and they said, "You are crazy." At that time, you know, we were in a demographic height, so there were 10 people for one place at the law faculty at most universities in Poland. So the competition was enormous, and I had like little chances coming from biotech class. I didn't study history almost a lot, so I had to do in 6 months almost impossible to kind of review everything and even learn more to have some chances. But maybe because this is a part of my character that I put all my efforts to do my best, and I said if I don't try, I will not know. And guess what? I passed, you know. I got to the university, to the law faculty. I was one of the first students on the list to be accepted. I was surprised by that. Of course, there was a lot of luck, you know, the questions I received and etc. But there was a lot of hard work, and also I knew the consequences. So if I do not enter the university, I would have to do something for 1 year, probably go to work. It was not appealing to a teenager that wanted to have excitement.
Yes, I think what you're saying is interesting. And you know, and we have known each other for a long time, and I never knew actually that you had changed your mind, and then once of a sudden wanted to. For me, it was very clear that you're the personification of a lawyer. So,
Not
it's really kind of nice to get this background story. The other thing that I find interesting in what you're saying, maybe for all listeners, and that sometimes we kind of forget because we are so much in our day-to-day, is that actually you dreamt of something when you were a teen and you're actually living
yeah.
your dream now. And I think that sometimes we forget that, you know, sometimes we are so much in the day-to-day work, in especially as lawyers, you know, we have people to manage, deadlines to manage, we have expectations, we have time pressure, we have fees, you know, we're clients. And I think that it's important for us sometimes to pause, to look back, and actually to acknowledge that due to the hard work that we put into, right? I know that sometimes people think that things happen because they happen, but actually when you look in a more detailed manner into things, you will realize that in most cases, people who kind of I would not say only successful, but that you know that make things happen. It's because they work very hard to get things done. So, but I think also it's a really important message to share that it's good to take those moments of awareness and to say, actually, I'm leaving pretty much what I dreamed of. I'm leaving something that I aspire to, and to that extent, we are lucky, right? Because not everyone is in that position, and I think that it's a nice message also for those that are in the midst of the struggle, right? In the midst of putting all the effort in. And it's good to remember that it was hard, but then at some point it
I
also
would
pays
also
off.
add one thing that maybe when I talk to other people, they also forget because I wouldn't be where I am now. I wouldn't meet you. I wouldn't do a lot of things that I did without looking for opportunities. And, you know, taking the risk to start. As an example, I
Yes.
may tell you that when I joined the company, I was very unfledged bird. I didn't have a clue, well, or very little clue what I was doing in IP. And there was a letter coming, it was many, many years ago now, from WIPO about the course in for mediators, you know. And by
Yes.
joke, I went to my boss and I said, I would like to do this course. And she laughed. I was not even a patent attorney trainee at that time. It was not a requirement, you know, to join the course, but it was for professionals. And there was a fee, you know, of course, the cost. And she was in a good mood, and she said, you know, this is not for you, not at this level. And I said, why don't you let me try? And she made a deal. She joked, but I pursued this idea further. And she said, "Okay, I will send you to this course, but if you do not finish it, we will deduct all the costs from your salary." And it was tiny salary, so for me it would be a big loss. And I said, "Well, fine." So I treated it as a challenge. I went to Geneva. Obviously, I was really, you know, when I entered the room, I was like 20 years younger than all the others, and they looked at me, "What this girl is doing here?" But I finished this course, and but you know, if you do not push a little bit the idea, even if it is a little bit ahead of your skills or current situation, you will never, I don't know, maybe not never, but you will not progress. Because this at that meeting in Geneva, I met one of my best friends now, but also an IP practitioner, and she introduced me to some other possibilities. That's how I started to go, for example, to attend APA meetings, because she's from Asia. Otherwise, I wouldn't, you know, hear about it, or I would have heard about it some years later, you know. And so I think looking for opportunities and not being afraid to push yourself a little bit in different directions to try things is another thing that we should do, apart from looking back and checking up with what we really wanted to do. Because, you know, work is in progress. I didn't, going back to my choosing law, one of the things I already knew when I chose law, I knew that I wouldn't like to become a criminal lawyer, a simple lawyer. Can you imagine? And I knew that from the day one at the university, I said I would never practice criminal law or anything like that. So the idea was, well, I wanted to become a diplomat, but by accident I ended up doing IP. But this is just taking the opportunity. When the opportunity to join the firm, I did a research. It was one of the best IP firms in Poland, and I said, "Well, IP is pretty international. Why don't I just go there for an interview and give it a try?" You know, I already had a work. I worked at the Ministry of Health in Warsaw before joining this company, and I didn't need to change at that time because I still could have worked there, gained more experience in the health department. And yeah, I went for an interview. They offered me a job, and then there was 2 days of hesitation and thinking, what should I do? What is the good? And then say, "Well, okay, no matter what, I'm trying it," you know. And that's more or less how many decisions happened in my life, not without thinking, but it was just taking the opportunity that arose, you know. And also,
I think, yeah, I really like the statement, and I think it's a statement that has been made by some other of my guests. And I'm happy that this time it comes from a woman, because I had at least one of my guests as a male leader. He said he would really wish for women to go beyond what they already know, to believe more in reaching out, even if they know that they might be missing some of the knowledge or some of the skills that are required for a different job or for a course or for a new role. And I think you were saying exactly that, right? Let's not be afraid in believing in ourselves and reach out for opportunities, not only for opportunities that we believe will fulfill already all the skills and all the criteria that the position or the course or the role requires, but actually, stretch ourselves, risk a little bit, take a little bit of risk and just go for it. Because, as you mentioned, and as you actually have proven, it works. And I think there is many, many more of those stories, that we could share. I think it's just a really important message for all those that are listening, especially if it's young professionals, they're just starting, if they're female, just take the leap of faith and go for the things, even though they may seem a little bit out of reach or maybe not yet at the precise level. So I think that's really a nice message to actually conclude our conversation, Anna. I would like to thank you once more for sharing a bit about you and about your thinking around gender and leadership.
Thank you, Mirta. I appreciate it. I hope, you know, if only one person gets inspired, that's already a lot. I think you would agree with that.
Definitely, yes.
So I would just say it's a great idea. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you and for this podcast. I am a fan of that. And thank you again. I appreciate to be able to share my story.
Thanks so much, Anna. Thanks so much,
Bye
everyone.
bye.
Bye.
I hope you liked this episode of Leadaching in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!